Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I'm Rebecca LaGuire, and this is Raven News. Alaska Oil and Gas Association President Kara Moriarty traveled from Anchorage this week to speak to Sitka's Chamber of Commerce about the state of the oil and gas industry in Alaska. She started her talk by highlighting AOGA's connection to the permanent fund dividends Alaskans have received since 1982.
So how many of you received every single permanent fund check since 1982? So about half of the room. Quiz question, because I am a former school teacher, that's how I got to Alaska, I should have said. So what's the total number, just in real dollars, not interest, not anything else, how much have you received as an Alaskan since 1982?
A little over $35,000.
You are right.
I'm good, aren't I?
Yes, that is very good. So it's $35,143 to be exact.
Moriarty explained how almost all oil and gas production occurs on state land. AOGA negotiates a royalty with the state on land leased for production. She says about 25% of those royalties that the state collects goes into the permanent fund. Moriarty also spoke to the future of Alaska's oil and gas industry. She says maintaining the current infrastructure and keeping oil fields healthy is the key to making way for future development.
If you hear that Alaska is running out of oil, I'm just here to tell you that it is not true. The good news is Alaska is very rich in resources. And again, a lot of it is a long ways away from here, and some of it's a long ways away from Anchorage, where I currently live. But this chart shows two different sides. State land, we think there's just around 600 million barrels left in Cook Inlet, about 5 billion barrels in the known fields, Prudhoe and Kuparuk. We think there's a lot of heavy and viscous oil, the unconventionals of shale, and then the other side is the federal side. And I'll talk a little bit more about the offshore and MPRA and ANWR. But if you look at that all together, and not including heavy and viscous, where we don't have the technology today to produce that oil, we have about 45, 50 billion barrels of potential. And if you compare that to what we've produced to date since the 70s, we've produced just over 17 billion. So we have several generations of oil and gas left if we have the ability to produce it, whether we have some federal challenges that there's nothing we can do as a state, but we can control our competitiveness here. But the major prize is the Chukchi Sea off the west coast of the North Slope, off Point Lay, Point Hope, off to the, it's about 50, 60 miles offshore. And we think there's about 27 billion barrels of oil potential out there. And remember I said we've produced how many to date? 17 billion to date. So for me, this is the next generation of oil and gas.
Moriarty says that production in this region is still 12 to 15 years away when factoring in the time it takes to test what's there, clear legal hurdles, and secure development permits. At the end of her presentation, Moriarty said she would be remiss if she did not mention AOGA's opposition to ballot Proposition 1 repealing Senate Bill 21. The Republican majority in 2013 passed a measure known as SB 21, restructuring Alaska's system of taxing oil profits. She echoed the points raised by First Bank Mortgage Manager Rocky Ellerding when he addressed the Sitka's Chamber last month in January. You can find a link to that story and all our stories on our website at kcaw.org. Alaska's mayors and other local officials are worried their governments may be asked to pay more towards public employees' retirement. The lobbying group Alaska Municipal League is backing Governor Sean Parnell's proposal to use $3 billion in savings to reduce an estimated $12 billion shortfall in state pension funds. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Alaska communities and the state share the costs of the public employees' retirement system. Municipalities pay 22% of their payroll into PERS each year. Some also pay 12.5% into the teachers' retirement system. The state pays the rest of what's needed to cover pensions in a particular year. That amount is determined by actuaries and set annually by the Alaska Retirement Management Board. Kathy Wasserman is executive director of the Alaska Municipal League.
Certainly, it's a good enough chunk that municipalities cannot afford for that to go up.
If nothing is done to address the PERS shortfall, Wasserman fears the local contribution could increase to 40% of payroll. She says the governor's plan to transfer $3 billion from the Constitutional Budget Reserve to the retirement system would maintain the rate at 22% until the funds are solvent, whenever that might be.
We really can't define how many years because it's based on interest rates, based on the market, it's based on, you know, baby boomers, when people die. There's a lot of variability in that. But 22% right now we can plan for.
Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson says local communities need predictability.
If we keep it at those percentages, we're not going to be able to do business and keep our infrastructure in place, keep police and fire operating, schools open, that kind of thing.
The Parnell administration estimates its proposal would reduce the state's annual payment to PERS and TERS. Without the cash infusion, the governor's office says the state would soon pay more than $1 billion a year toward the pension shortfall. Deputy Administration Commissioner Mike Barnhill told the Alaska Municipal League that doing nothing is not appealing.
If the governor's approach doesn't pass, the status quo will persist. We will continue to make actuarially required contributions, however they're calculated.
The governor's plan is part of his proposed operating budget. Many states and communities in the lower 48 have faced even bigger pension problems, leading to bankruptcies and cuts to retirement payments. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The effort to pass a piece of legislation to reauthorize 12 economic development organizations in Alaska hit a snag recently in the Alaska legislature. KDLG's Mike Mason has the details.
The 12 Alaska Regional Development Organizations date back to the late 1980s when the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program was created. The authorization for that program expired last year after a reauthorization effort failed during last year's first session of the 28th Alaska Legislature. The bill that included the reauthorization was House Bill 71. It passed the Alaska House unanimously last March, but the bill was substantially changed in the Senate to include language focused on fisheries. Senator Donnie Olson from Golovin was successful in attaching language to House Bill 71, renewing programs dealing with permitting for Korean hair crab and weather vane scallop fisheries. The Senate then unanimously passed their version of the bill. The Senate version of the bill was opposed by several members of the House, including Paul Seaton from Homer. After the end of last year's session, he explained his opposition by noting that the Senate chose to roll in the unrelated issue of the extension of the scallop and hair crab vessel-based temporary limited entry permit program. Seaton suggests this caused a violation of the state constitution because a bill is only supposed to deal with one subject. He also noted that he has long opposed the fishery model, which allows corporate ownership of state fishing permits, and Seaton confirms that he refused to allow such an extension bill to make it through the House Fisheries Committee, of which Seaton is the chair. The scallop limited entry program in Alaska expired at the end of 2013. After a lot of debate and discussion last year, in the end, neither body would pass the other body's version of the bill, resulting in a conference committee. That committee could never come to an agreement, and last year's session ended without the Alaska Regional Development Organizations, or ARDRs as they're known, being reauthorized. That left the 12 ARDR organizations facing budget issues. Just days into this year's session of the legislature, another conference committee was appointed to work out the differences in the bill. That committee met last Friday, but they could not reach an agreement. State Senator John Coghill was the chair of the Senate part of the committee. He said yet another conference committee with some added powers to make changes to the bill is needed in order to make the two bills work together as one piece of legislation.
We're really untangling an issue that did get tangled up at the end of the last session, and so there was significant disagreement, and we have found a way to move forward, and I think generally we're there.
The new conference committee to look at House Bill 71 will include Representatives Hawker, Olson, and Josephson, and Senators Dunleavy, Geisel, and Wilkowski. During Tuesday's Senate Majority Caucus press conference, Senator Coghill tried to explain what's going on. He asserts that a free conference committee is needed because that committee has the freedom to address things not included in the versions of the bill passed by the House and Senate.
Part of the negotiated agreement between the various different parties was to delink the hair crab fishery from the scallop fishery. Like it or not, that's kind of where we ended up. And the statute was so broad that you had to actually include other statutes that was not included in those. But the effective date on the ARDRs is left in there, and the hair crab potential, by the way, it's a potential fishery. It's not an actual fishery at this point. It's just a potential. But the arters get reauthorized. So what it does, it looks to me like, I read the language early this morning, and the best I can tell, it looks like they shut them on one day and opened them the next day. And so it looks like we've been able to effectively go back and get it. Hopefully that helps them snag federal dollars, because that was one of the hard parts of trying to figure out if it goes out of date, how can we get it back in? It looks like we got the language set, and you'll see a conference committee in the next couple of days to deal with that. So the arters and the hair crab will be kind of reauthorized, it looks like to me. That's the language I've seen to date, and pretty much that's the agreement that I hear everybody has agreed to.
There are 12 arter organizations in Alaska, including the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, the Bering Strait Development Council, the Kenai Economic Development District, the Lower Kuskokwim Economic Development Council, and the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. Swampsea is the arter for the Bristol Bay, Aleutians, and Kodiak. They've all had to deal with the loss of over $859,000 in state funding since they were not reauthorized. The new conference committee for House Bill 71 has yet to meet. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
It's currently 28 degrees outside and in Sitka, and today's calling for mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers, highs around 35. East wind 10 miles per hour. Tonight's going to also be mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers, lows around 28 with east winds 10 miles per hour. And tomorrow will be sunny with highs around 35, east wind 10 miles per hour. We'll be rejoining NPR's Morning Edition, and I will be back with you shortly at 18 after the hour. Thank you so much for joining me. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW, Sitka. I hope you're having an excellent morning.